Back to the Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is the Big Show. Thanks for tuning in today. By the way, as we enter hour two, reminder, you can listen to Sportsnet 960 The Fan a ton of different ways. The old trusty 960 on your AM dial. You can also stream us online at sportsnet.ca/960 or tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And if you missed anything from our first hour or you missed our daily conversation with Peter Labardius, you can catch it and all of our programs wherever you get your podcasts: Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, Amazon. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. The Big Show is live as it is every single day from the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. Iconic Electric and Controls, where they treat every employee like family. An iconic family. Apply to join the team at iconicec.ca/careers. New to this program, of course, the same old name, but we're going to do a couple of things that are new. And this one, I'm very excited to see how it evolves over the coming weeks and months. Of course, Monday shows can always be a little bit difficult because we've got a lot of different things that have happened over the weekend and a lot of different options to talk about on today's show, not to mention the news that's come out on this Monday that you've also got to factor in. So I thought we'd present everything to you in a nice little wrapped-up package that we'll call the Big Show Top 5 Weekend Moments. They could be different from yours. They could be different from what Logan has as his top five moments. But there's so much that happens over the weekend. I figured this is a great way to get us all caught up on some of the biggest moments that you may have missed. Let's start with number five. The San Jose Sharks have terminated the contract of Evander Kane. It was Saturday afternoon when Elliot Friedman first broke the news. The Sharks were placing Evander Kane on unconditional waivers with the intent to terminate his contract. He's in the middle of a 7-year, $49 million contract with the Sharks. He had 3 seasons remaining at a $7 million AAV. And in terms of money left, including this season, the Sharks were due to pay him $22.9 million. And that's what he stands to lose with this termination. Here is Elliot Friedman on what exactly happened with Kane and the Sharks.
What's obviously happened here is people know Kane was suspended 21 games this year because of the use of the fake vaccination card. And at the time, I wondered if they were going to avoid his deal. And I was told at the time that it was just felt that there at that point in time, they couldn't do it. Well, now what we have here is another, and we should say that Kane is disputing this. So, and ultimately the arbitrator will decide. But we have another potential violation where he tested positive for coronavirus on December 21st, and he took a flight to Vancouver on December 29th while he was supposed to be serving his mandatory 10-day American Hockey League quarantine. But also, there is another thing there that the Sharks are alleging, and that is a failure to show up on his return on time. They are saying he was supposed to be back on December 31st, and he did not return until January 6th. And there's no way the Sharks did this without the approval of the NHL. The league has said, yes, we were aware of it, and we feel in this case we do have a breach. So that's why the Sharks did it, and, you know, we'll see where this goes. As I said on the podcast this morning, I've learned over the years, don't guess with arbitrators. You never know what they're going to rule. For every lawyer you can find who's going to argue one thing, you're going to find a lawyer who can argue the other thing. And because there's so much money at stake here, about $23 million, you know every argument's going to be made.
So as you heard there, there has been a grievance filed by the NHLPA on this termination. It will go to an arbitrator, and I agree with Elliot 100%. You can't guess. You don't know where this thing is going to go. And when there's $22.9 million on the line, they're going to fight for every cent they can get, as that is their right, and they should do that. And of course, if you're Evander Kane, you're going to want to do that as well. And as you heard in that clip, the reason for the termination was because of some breaching of the standard player contract and violating the AHL's COVID-19 protocols. He had 2 goals and 8 points in 5 games with the Barracuda this season after he was suspended 21 games for submitting a fake COVID-19 vaccination card. Now, I should mention his agent, Dan Milstein, has since come out and said that there is a ton of interest in Evander Kane because, of course, they would sign him to a one-year deal worth little money, and he would play there the rest of the season. And I think the entire time, Logan, when we talked about the future of Evander Kane, what it was going to be in the NHL, where he might play in the NHL next, a lot of that was associated to the cost. And when you had $7 million times three, if you're a team interested in this guy, that's a hard pill to swallow. But if you're going to bring him in for 3 months at $700,000, well, it's a completely different conversation. And I know there's probably some of you out there listening right now. You might be one of them, Logan, that says, how many chances does this cat get? Does he have nine lives or more? But right now, as it stands, it appears that perhaps his NHL career is not done just yet. And I can understand that at a cheaper and literally a trial contract for the next couple of months, I can see why a contending team might entertain that. I mean, he was a very, very useful and productive player just last season. He for sure would have to be brought into a team that has got strong leadership and a very strong dressing room. But Evander Kane will have interest at that cheap of a deal, whether you like it or not. And we'll see where this thing, the whole thing, kind of comes out here. But there's been a lot happening over the weekend with Evander Kane.
I think the most surprising thing to me in this whole story, Will, was how many people were surprised that there were interest in Evander Kane throughout the league. To me, I'm not stunned by that. I think you can look at any example of pro sports, be it the NFL and say even say the Antonio Brown situation. If you can take away the monetary risk of bringing a guy in, whether that be term or dollars or an Evander Kane's, you know, I guess now former contract or disputed contract with the San Jose Sharks, both of those things, if you can take those variables away, sports teams have always shown you they're going to take a chance on a guy, and they're always going to believe that, look, our group is the group that's going to get them focused and playing in the right direction, and all of those skill sets, you know, all the bad negativity is going to go away with our team, and he's going to come in and be a big asset. And if there's no risk behind it because you can just let this guy go, if it's a one-year deal at, you know, minimal money, then I can understand why teams would be interested. It's something that we've seen all the time. I am a bit tired of hearing the Evander Kane story, the back and forth of, you know, the COVID situations with him and him flaunting the rules and, you know, sort of the discourse that he's had with San Jose. I'll be curious to see where this ends up because I really don't have a good idea, similar to what you and Elliot have sort of laid out there. You don't know how an arbitrator is going to view these situations and the cases laid out by both sides, but could we see Evander Kane playing on another NHL team as soon as, you know, before this season's done? I think it's 100% possible, and the story just takes another interesting turn, and his future very much up in the air right now.
Moment number four, the Colorado Avalanche and Toronto Maple Leafs showcase their skill during Saturday night showdown as Toronto and Colorado from Denver, the only matchup on Hockey Night in Canada. What year are we living in? One game on Hockey Night in Canada. Of course, there's COVID-19 cancellations and postponements that played a massive role into that. But still, this matchup lived up to the hype. Former Av Alexander Kerfoot got the scoring started. He opened it up at 7:54 into the first period. He would then record an assist on the next two goals, courtesy Austin Matthews, his 21st and 22nd goals of the season. It is 3-0 Toronto, just shy of the 15-minute mark of the opening period. Maybe it's not going to live up to the hype. But then the Avalanche came storming back courtesy of this guy.
Nathan MacKinnon!
He made it 3-1 before the end of the first period, and then Nick Ritchie made it 4-1 leads with the second goal of the season, and guess who starts the Colorado comeback moments later?
Back to Ove Kubel, shoots, saved by Campbell, and it went off the end of his glove. Here is Gale, looks up top. McCarr sweeps and shoots. He scores! Oh, my goodness gracious. Kale McCarr, what can you do?
Kale McCarr is having a season. His 15th goal of the year. Just a quick note for you, Logan, and everybody listening. Kale McCarr, the Calgary native, on pace for 46 goals this season.
Is that good?
Oh!
Is that a lot for a defenseman, Will? Seems like a lot.
I believe there's only two gentlemen who have ever scored 40-plus as a D-man in the NHL in history. Somebody named Bobby Orr.
Never heard of him.
And somebody named Paul Coffey. I believe those are the only two. So, pretty good company if you're Cale Makar. Nobody has scored even 30 goals since Mike Green did it a handful of years ago with the Washington Capitals. Man, is he fun to watch. It was 4-2 Toronto after 40, and the Avalanche are just one of those teams, like Toronto even, you just can't ever count them out of a game. It never feels like they're out of it. Landeskog and JT Compher scored in the third period. We're off to overtime in a 4-4 tie, and Devon Taves completed the comeback. He scored the winner. The Avalanche complete the comeback, winning 5-4 in overtime, which is massive for them as they try to move up the Central Division standings, and they continue to put pressure on the others as they've got the best points percentage in that division and a big chunk as they've got 5 games in hand on both Nashville and St. Louis. Colorado, Logan, is healthy for the first time all season, and they're finally looking like the juggernaut we all thought they would be before the season.
I wanted to spin this as a, look, Toronto losing leads, and we've seen this story before, but honestly, well, to me, the bigger story is Colorado and just being this, you use the word juggernaut. It's hard to disagree with that word. This is a team that's so well built, that has so many different options. We mentioned the history that Cale Makar is on pace to do. Look at Nazem Kadri, who is, you know, finding a way there. And I believe is up to 32 assists after that OT winner with Devon Taves there. Like, as if this team needed another weapon down the middle, they now have one there. Colorado has just been that team that has, to me, Will, and I don't know if you feel the same, been on the verge of making that long playoff run. Like, they just, once they win a round or two, man, look out. That's sort of the area that I've seen them in. For the last couple of years, they've just got so much talent and so much depth on this team that even against a good team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think the Leafs are a very good team, they can pull this sort of crazy comeback out of their hat, and you can't honestly be that stunned, because just listen to the names that you rattled off there, MacKinnon and Landeskog and Makar. This is a team that is built to do damage like that, and they are showing the NHL that they are every bit as dangerous as maybe we thought they were going to be in the beginning of the season.
They've got 7 skaters, or 8 skaters, sorry, with 20 or more points. Nazem Kadri, you mentioned it, 32 assists. He leads that team in scoring. If you would have told me at the start of the year, at almost 30 games into the year, or over 30 games for this team, that Kadri would be leading them in scoring, I would have thought you were crazy. 12 goals and 44 points for Nazem Kadri in 28 games this season. Rantanen has been dynamite, no surprise there. MacKinnon has been hurt this season, but still has played 21 games, has 34 points, just 5 goals for MacKinnon. He scored, of course, in that game on Saturday. But yeah, this is an Avalanche team that right now I would not want to play in the playoffs. We're a long ways from getting there. But this team's got every bit of chance, just like anybody else in that division, to win it. I mentioned their games in hand. They've got the best points percentage, obviously, in that division. And after a disastrous start to his tenure in Denver, Darcy Kuemper has been dynamite of late. He is 16-5 in 23 appearances with a .908 save percentage. So to have that thing so low early to start the year, it's going to take a while to get it back up to maybe a .915 or .920. But that's how good Darcy Kuemper has been. And if he can figure it out come playoff time, I do think this is a team that's going to be dangerous and not a team that I would want to face. How about moment number 3? After 31 months away, Klay Thompson making his Golden State Warriors return.
He's back! And now in his 11th NBA season, out of Washington State University, number 11, Klay Thompson!
After 31 months away due to ACL and Achilles injuries, the beloved Warriors star made his long-awaited return to the court on Sunday night against the Cleveland Cavaliers. his first game since Game 6 of the 2019 NBA Finals against the Toronto Raptors. He's missed 177 games, and he wasn't shy on trying to get right back into it. He had 18 shots in those 20 minutes he played. He went 3-for-8 beyond the arc, finished with 17 points as the Cavaliers get their 30th, or sorry, the Warriors beat the Cavaliers for the 30th win of the year, 96-82. Here's Thompson postgame.
It was a very special moment, so I'll never forget. I'll never forget that this night. I'll never forget the reception the Warrior fans gave us, especially myself. And gosh, it was fun, and it was worth every single day of being away and in that squat rack or on that shuttle board and all the conditioning days. It was worth every single moment, and I'm so grateful to just compete again. It's been a long road, but I'm just also proud of myself for persevering, and it was a very special moment. I'll never forget.
He made reference to it in that clip, and I think sometimes we are guilty of forgetting about it, Logan. I mean, this is Klay Thompson, a multiple NBA Finals winner, a guy who's gotten more money than anybody ever needs in life. But just imagine the grind he's been through. We're talking, 2.5+ years. 2 years and 7 months, 31 months, 177 games missed. Of course, a pandemic mixed in there. Klay Thompson, just to see him battle through that and come back was amazing. And I'm not sure if you've seen it yet, but he also had a highlight reel dunk in that game, and his teammates were giving him a hard time, saying that was not something he did when he had a healthy knee and a healthy Achilles. So with a healthy Klay Thompson, the Warriors already having a great season. To add him now to the mix, they're positioned well to get back to an NBA Finals this spring, and he'll be back on the court tomorrow as the Warriors visit the Grizzlies in Memphis. But I just wanted to bring this one up because I feel like we don't give enough love to the human side of it, and none of us have maybe had serious injuries like Klay Thompson has had, and if we have, we haven't been in a spot where we have to get back to being a professional athlete. But I just can't imagine the mental grind he has been on. And a lot of those hours, as you heard him talk about on the squat rack or with the shuttle, that was done alone with no teammates around, maybe a trainer, maybe somebody from the Warriors coaching staff. But that's an absolute grind for him. And I just thought it was awesome to see him back on the court. And obviously, Warrior fans loved it. He got a great reception. To do it at home would be awesome for him. And I just think that, as he said, even in some of the clips last night, to know that he can do that and have the confidence now that he's back to a healthy level, whether it's shooting threes or even dunking over dudes, the guy feels confident in his physical abilities now, and he says the sky's the limit, and I believe him. And I do think we'll see return, even if it just that glimpses of the old Klay Thompson. And I just thought that was an awesome feel-good story. And I wanted to bring it to light today. It's moment two from the weekend.
I liked it a lot. I think it's a deserving moment from the weekend as well for a guy that's, I don't want to say was forgotten, Will, but I mean, did we appreciate how much Klay Thompson was a part of those great Warriors teams before all of these injuries and how much fun he was as part of the Splash Brothers there? And look, I don't doubt for a second that it's hard for anybody to go through that kind of stretch, because you have to be that next level competitive athlete to reach the peak, to reach the peak of an NBA career or a football career, anything like that. So to have to sit for the amount of time that he did would drain a guy mentally. And look, he's 31 years old now. Think about the last 2 years that he lost. Those are two peak years of his career that he couldn't play basketball, and he'll never be able to get those back, and he'll never have a chance to, he'll always forever wonder what it would have been like if he hadn't, torn his ACL and he was able to be out there with Steph last season, or he was able to stay healthy in that finals against the Raptors. Those are things he'll always have to go through. But you're right to give credit to a guy for mentally having the fortitude to bounce back and keep working and not let it get the best of you is a great story, and ones that sometimes we don't appreciate enough. And you're right. Is he ever going to be the same Klay Thompson he was? Maybe not. but there's still clearly a great will in there from him to be a basketball player and to be an NBA caliber basketball player. And I think that things are only going to look up from him here. And I think that seeing his teammates' reaction, seeing the fans' reaction, tells you a lot about the dude, because you just feel good. And for his teammates to be that excited for him, they were, you know, they went through that battle with him. They were there. They understand what he's gone through, and they were happy to see him make that comeback last night. I hope it's only good things going forward for him.
Yeah, Draymond Green hurt his calf in warm-up and was a late scratch, but then saw that Klay was coming back, so he started the game with his strained calf. And, you know, 5 or 10 seconds into the game, whatever it was, the first stoppage was subbed out. But that tells you the excitement his teammates had to see him back out there. Of course, Draymond Green, a longtime teammate of Klay Thompson. That very easily could have been the top moment of the weekend. That's how good it was. But we go from that absolute high to this absolute low, as moment number two is the Indianapolis Colts collapsing in Jacksonville. It was said multiple times leading into the game, almost like they were preparing Colts fans for the worst. The Indianapolis Colts had not won and still haven't won a game in Jacksonville since 2014. 7 consecutive road losses to their divisional rivals. All Indy had to do was win the game against the lowly Jaguars, and they would be in the AFC playoffs. It was a nightmare from start to finish. With a playoff berth on the line, the Colts were a no-show in Jacksonville. Here's head coach Frank Reich.
You know, just learn and grow from it. Was out. We started the way we started. It was out of our hands. We fought and scratched and clawed to get it back in our hands. And then the last 2 weeks of the season, we did what we did. And so it starts with me as the head coach. And, you know, we got to figure out how we can close this season out the right way. How we can coach better, how we can play better. You know, we had the opportunity, we had control of our own destiny, and we just didn't get it done.
Jonathan Taylor was held to 77 rushing yards, and Carson Wentz was horrible. He turned the ball over twice on consecutive throws, I might add, leading to 10 Jacksonville points. The 26-11 win could have been even bigger had the Jags not settled for a couple of chip shot field goals inside the 5-yard line. Despite the win, the Jags had a pretty good day, as they still lock up the first overall pick in this year's draft thanks to a Lions win over Green Bay in Detroit. Salt in the wound coming for the Colts, not only for that, but also they lose the first-round pick in the Wentz trade to Philadelphia, and you don't make the playoffs, and the Eagles do. That is a big old oof, and the Colts, I just don't have words for what we saw on Sunday, Logan, because you just heard it from Frank Reich. They had destiny in their hands, and they completely, completely stubbed their toe.
It's a head scratcher at best. This is a team that, by the way, just has no luck against the Jacksonville Jaguars for whatever reason. 7 straight road losses now to Jacksonville. The Jaguars have not been good in years. This iteration, one of the worst. They're going on an interim coach, a rookie quarterback. We've talked so much about at different times, you know, this Colts team, their ability to step up, and, you know, whether it's Darius Leonard on the back end and defense, or it's Jonathan Taylor on the offensive side of things, to come out and let Jacksonville run your show in a game that meant literally nothing to them. It had no impact on their situation at all, other than to just screw your night up. And for that to be the sort of effort that you came out with, to me, is just stunning. I don't know how Jonathan, I get the game script is, you know, you're behind from the first quarter, but potentially the best running back in the game right now winds up with 15 carries. Like, you've got to feed that guy as much as you can, especially when Carson Wentz, I don't know about you, well, hasn't shown me anything all year to make me think that he's going to be the guy that suddenly leads us to this massive comeback. I'm just at a loss for words. I thought maybe this Colts team was built a little bit differently mentally to not have this sort of slip up, but boy, was I wrong, because they really let one slip yesterday, and a perfect chance for them to walk into the postseason and control their own destiny. And that's the kind of effort that you come out with against a divisional rival. Just not good enough.
Carson Wentz, I'm with you. I think we learned this season, while he had a couple of moments, It's pretty clear that the injuries have caught up to him. What made him great that year in Philadelphia, albeit when he got injured, but what made him great that season was his mobility and his ability to get out of the pocket when things were collapsing on him and use his athleticism to make good decisions and good throws. Ultimately, was he ever the best thrower of the football, and is he still ever that guy? No, he's not. But I think some of the injuries he's had is now making him, you know, really, really slow, and we've seen that at different times this season and certainly saw that Sunday against Jacksonville. He just doesn't have the ability to escape like he did in those years in Philadelphia when he was dynamite, and the Colts gave up a lot for a guy who very clearly at this point is a below-average NFL starter. We'll see what they do in 2022 at quarterback. But, man, that is a tough one to swallow for the Colts, who, as you heard in that clip from Frank Reich, started the year where, you know, they put themselves in a tough hole. They had so many moments of up and down, including a tough loss to Tennessee where it felt like they could take command of the division, and they fought like hell to bring it back. And they got it back on the rails. And the last couple of weeks looked like a team that nobody wanted to play in the playoffs, primarily because of their running back. And yeah, in a game where they absolutely needed to win against a team who had two wins all season, just not good enough. And plain and simple, a disaster when you look at how the season ended for the Indianapolis Colts. They've got some big-time thinking to do this offseason. Now, moment number one, I hate to do this to my co-host, but I have to because it was the most talked about game and perhaps the greatest season finale in the NFL, certainly that we have seen in the last decade plus. The Chargers and the Raiders almost playing to a tie as the LA Chargers and the Raiders played Sunday night in Vegas. Winner heading to the playoffs, loser heading home. Or the two teams could play to a tie and both head to the playoffs. The game was awesome. I'll start by saying that there's always a chance a game like this could be a giant flop. We just talked about the Colts and them, you know, not showing up in a must-win game. There was certainly a chance for that to happen in this game, but both teams showed up, both teams fought hard, and it was a drama-filled night all the way until the end. Vegas jumped out to a 10-0 lead. The Chargers came roaring back with a pair of touchdowns, led 14-10. A late touchdown by Josh Jacobs in the first half gave him a 17-14 halftime lead. And then they scored the next 9 consecutive points. Raiders leading 26-14. It felt like maybe there wasn't going to be any drama. Well, they would fail the 2-point conversion, keeping it a 12-point game, unable to make it a 28-14 game. And then Carlson kicked another field goal to make it 29-14. And all of a sudden, the Raiders led by 15 with about 8 minutes to play. But the Chargers were not done, and they showed some fight. Josh Palmer catches one in the end zone as the Raiders forgot about him, didn't defend him at all. Easy touchdown from Justin Herbert. It was now 29-20 with 4:35 to play, and Brandon Staley made a ballsy call as he elects to go for two now instead of the next time they score. And it was massive because you could kick it, keep it a one-score game, or if you failed a 2-point conversion and kept it a 9-point game, you would still need 2 scores with 4.5 minutes to play. So a crazy, crazy decision. Of course, they convert it and look brilliant. It's 29-22, and then the Chargers march down the field and tie the game 29-29 thanks to a Mike Williams touchdown with 5 seconds left. Off to overtime we go with a playoff berth on the line. Amazing finish of the season. And it felt like one of those movie scripts you just couldn't believe. I know Chris Collinsworth talked about that in the game. The Raiders kicked the field goal and on their first drive to grab a 3-point lead. And then the Chargers came back. They're marching the field. They kick a field goal. It's a 32-32 game. And you're thinking, oh, man, maybe this thing is going to play to a tie. Maybe these division rivals are going to shake hands and say, hey, you know what? Let's both go to the playoffs. Let's knock the Pittsburgh Steelers out. But I mentioned the head-scratching decisions by head coach Brandon Staley in this game. Another one came with 38 seconds to play.
This will be a 30-second timeout.
What?
Hey, can you
Yeah, I think the Raiders were playing to get it down to either a field goal or just let the clock run out, and the Chargers took the timeout.
I'm trying to process this myself.
Wow.
I know.
That was the call with 38 seconds. Of course, the next play, Josh Jacobs runs for a first down, and then as the clock winds down, they take a game-winning field goal. 35-32, Raiders win, Chargers go home. What a crazy, crazy game. Easily the top moment of the week. And as I say, we know on this show, if you've listened to this show for any time the last, 2 months, certainly last week, you know that Logan Gordon is a massive Chargers fan. I'm not sure, Logan, that game gets any more Chargers than what we saw last night. What an unbelievable game. It ends in heartbreak for your team. And as I say, I'm sorry to do this, but it had to be the top moment of the week. And the Chargers go home. What's going through your mind now, as we approach 12 hours postgame?
There was a lot, and yes, I think you're right. If I was to ever try to explain to someone what it's like to be a Chargers fan on a week-to-week basis, what does it feel? I just replay that game, and you'll get a pretty good sense of it. It's, mistakes when you don't need it. It's boneheaded plays, questionable plays at the best of times. And look, I think Brandon Staley, I think, overthought the game a bit. And you wanted to talk about pressure, and Chris Collinsworth, now Michaels, talked about, Justin Herbert being in that spot, just a second-year quarterback, and how these guys were going to respond to being in a pressure-packed game. I think the first-time head coach learned a bit about that yesterday and sort of found himself overthinking things in a game where it was win or go home. And the timeout late is the one that kills me. I know post-game he says it's about getting the best personnel on the field so that they can make it a tougher field goal for the Raiders, but that still doesn't, preclude you from understanding the situation in the game, that a tie still gets you there, and the Raiders aren't in any sort of fashion, moving that quickly. I don't think they were going to take a knee, but I don't know that the Raiders were all that interested in trying to run it out and get it into the end zone or anything like that. I think they would have been perfectly content with that, but the narrative and the message that it sends you taking that timeout, I think, clearly changed the Raiders' way of thinking. And now you obviously have to go out and make the tackle if you're the Chargers and not give up that first down to give Carlson a better chance at the field goal. But look, they were lucky to be in that position given some of the mistakes and the errors that they had made, the penalties against them throughout the game. They were lucky to be in that spot in overtime. Sometimes you just can't overthink it. You can't make it more of a situation than it already is. And at the end of the day, were the Chargers going to be a Super Bowl contender? I don't think so. But it certainly would have been nice to have Justin Herbert go to the playoffs and, get some national recognition for what he did. And the fact of the matter is they wouldn't even be in overtime if it wasn't for Justin Herbert, Will. So it's a frustrating way for the season to go out, and there'll be lots of people and lots of time for us to question exactly his thought process, but it's done now. The Raiders don't owe the Chargers anything as a divisional rival. They're well within their means to go out and kick a field goal, win the game, and walk off and not worry about anything that LA does. So there was lots of emotions last night. It was a crazy game. I can't even remember how many fourth down conversions we went back and forth. It was a great way to end off a fun NFL season.
Would have loved the ISO cam on you.
Oh,
was your family like,
just
okay, shut up?
Sweating, swearing, and yelling, and just brutal. My poor heart.
Survived, though.
Yep.
Your heart survived. We're here. You're breathing. Everything's good. That is your recap. Top five weekend moments. San Jose Sharks terminating Evander Kane's contract is number five. Number four, Avalanche and Leafs showcase their skill during a Saturday night showdown. Moment number three, after 31 months away, Klay Thompson makes his Warriors return. Number two, the Colts fumble their season. All of the chili scene in the office. And number one, the Chargers and Raiders almost play to a tie. Special shout out, by the way, as we are, 6 days away from the Australian Open in Melbourne. Special shout out to Tennis Canada, who claimed the ATP Cup over the weekend. Denis Shapovalov, Felix Auger-Aliassime, and the group winning the trophy and their first ATP Cup in their history. Of course, the event is only a couple of years old, but still a massive moment for Canada beating Spain in the final. And we're just days away from seeing what those two young gentlemen can do at the Australian Open, which, as I mentioned, begins on January 16th, next Sunday, for the kickoff, the official kickoff. I know there's been some events already, including one in Sydney, but the official kickoff to the tennis season. Looking forward to that coming up next Sunday. And I'm sure in the next couple of weeks here, Logan, fingers crossed that we get a bit of a run from one of those guys in the Aussie Open. And we'll probably be hearing more from the tennis world when it comes to our top five weekend countdown. There is your weekend wrap-up. It'll be every Monday at 2 o'clock going forward here on The Big Show. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get a little peek inside. Of course, top of the hour, headlines at 3 o'clock. Logan and I will give you the biggest news items of the day, but we'll focus in special attention next. Just a quick little update. And we'll set the scene, get you set for what should be a fun one tonight. If you're a football fan, it's always a game that I know everybody loves to kick off the new year with. A little bit later than usual. January 10th, though, in Indianapolis tonight, it's the Georgia Bulldogs and the Alabama Crimson Tide. A special look at the national championship game south of the border next as we continue on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Yo, Elliot, we doing this podcast or what?
Just a second.
What's the holdup?
The Flames just traded Tkachuk and Gaudreau.
What? You're kidding me.
Of course. I'm just putting in a food order.
Oof. I'll get the hook out of my mouth. That's what I have to put up with on the 32 Thoughts podcast.
32 Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the first ever GMC AT4 lineup. Engineered with off-road capabilities, signature bold styling, and unique AT4 interior to match. Visit GMCCanada.ca to see the GMC AT4 lineup today.
Calgary Sports Radio.
Sports Radio.
On the air, online, and on your smart speaker.
Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back. Hour two of The Big Show rolls on. Headlines coming up for you at the top of the hour. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. We're live in the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. We kicked off the show like we'll do every day moving forward with Peter Labardius. And that means you can find this every Friday. And of course, it's back. It stays with us. It's a staple. What does Lou say? Peter Labardius will join us every Friday at 1 o'clock to answer your burning hockey or sports question. And I do put that in there because it doesn't have to be hockey specific. Send in what you want to know from Lou at sportsnet.ca/960, and you could be the recipient of a pair of Lower Bowl tickets to an upcoming Flames game, plus $200 gift card to Ruth Chris Steakhouse. What Does Lou Say Every Friday is brought to you by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, where primetime steak is broiled to perfection and served sizzling on a 500-degree plate, ensuring each bite is as hot and delicious as the last. You deserve this. And, Logan, what we deserve is a delicious and drama-filled national championship game tonight. I don't know if we'll get that, as the last time these two teams played, it was a bit of a, let's just say blowout. As the Crimson Tide picked apart what has been a great defense all season long, 41-24 in the SEC championship game as the Tide crushed the Bulldogs. And tonight, Alabama and Georgia will go head-to-head in a rematch as the Bulldogs, they have a lot to play for tonight. They've got a 7-game losing streak against the Tide and a 41-year national title drought. So this is what they bring to the rematch at Lucas Oil Stadium. Of course, all eyes will be on Bryce Young and the Crimson Tide offense. The 20-year-old sophomore is the Heisman Trophy winner. He's had an unbelievable, historic Alabama season as he's the first Alabama quarterback to win the award. He had school records of 45-03 when it comes to passing yards, 4,503. Also had a school record 46 touchdowns, just 5 interceptions. He also had 3 touchdowns on the ground. Not as much of a runner as we've seen in previous Heisman Trophy winners, but nonetheless, he is elite. He picked this defense apart a few weeks ago, and I'll be curious to see what Georgia brings to the table tonight to try and slow him and the Alabama offense down. I just hope this thing is not a blowout. And despite all of what I just said about how Alabama has been dominant, they are the underdogs in tonight's game when it comes to the betting lines. And anytime they're the underdog, they usually win. So this should be a fun one, and I just hope it's closer than the 17-point spread we saw a few weeks ago.
I'm excited for this one for a number of reasons. I'm always excited to see what Alabama brings. It's a program that, you know, just doles out talent left and right, Will. We know about that. We see it every single year, it seems like. You know, you'll learn about a plethora of NFL future stars here tonight just on the Alabama side of things. But I love the dynamic of, you know, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart going up against each other again. You know, the mentor, the Bill Belichick of college football, and Nick Saban, who has this, you know, tree of coaches underneath him. You know, Kirby Smart, one of them, you know, trying to usurp the man that used to be his boss. And I think that there'll be plenty of motivation on the Georgia side of things. You mentioned they go in as favorites to this one. It's going to be interesting for a number of reasons. I do hope it's close. The national title game for me is one of those ones that can be such a great showcase and is so good for the sport and so much fun to watch when it's not a blowout. I know that's not always how it works. I have a good feeling about tonight. I've got my fingers crossed that we're going to get a good one on this Monday night. And when you bring so much talent to the forefront, like both of these teams do, I feel like you're either destined, Will, to have a blowout or to have a game that comes down to the final 2 minutes and a last drive sort of thing. It's just whoever's better prepared, whoever's ready for it. I'll be curious to see how Bryce Young handles things without John Mechie there. He's sort of been a safety blanket for him all season. Can Georgia pressure Bryce Young into some of those key mistakes? This has the makings of a great football game tonight, but like I said, I'm always wary of these super talented SEC teams because, look, one team comes prepared and another team's just a little slow off the start. Things can get out of hand quickly. I'm hoping that doesn't happen tonight, Will, but I know there's always that thought in the back of my mind that it might happen when you talk about how much talent these guys bring.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Kirby Smart and Nick Saban dynamic, and it reminds me a lot of the Bill Belichick dynamic in the NFL because it always feels like when Belichick goes up against one of his former assistants, there's one or two that have this success, and if they do, it's maybe in the first meeting, and after that, it's all Belichick, and it's kind of been the same way in this matchup, and really for any assistant that Saban faces. You mentioned his lengthy coaching tree and guys that have been on his staff that are now, you know, the heads of different programs across the NCAA. But it's one of those situations where, you know, Kirby Smart has seen the insides of what happens at Alabama, and yet Saban just continues to have dominance over his former assistant coaches. So we'll see if that changes tonight. Georgia, I mentioned the long drought. They're trying to win their first national title since Herschel Walker led the Bulldogs to the championship as a freshman in 1980, while Alabama is looking to add to their just ridiculous run. They're trying to go back-to-back as national champs for the second time under Saban. It would be number 7 in for Alabama in the last 13 seasons, and it's 13th overall in college football's poll era, which goes back to 1936. That would be the more than any other school. So there's no doubt about the dominance for Alabama. And yet they enter tonight as 2-point underdogs. So we're not talking about a massive spread. And the over-under is set at 53.5. I would hope we see the over. We're always cheering for the over. And if the last meeting taught us anything, there's a good chance it does hit the over. We'll see what happens. The only time that the Georgia Bulldogs under Kirby Smart had a chance to win was going back to the title game in 2017, as they had a 13-0 lead at the half. And, of course, the second half was all Alabama. But I'm with you. I just hope tonight's a little bit better than what we saw a few weeks ago in Atlanta. And I think we're going to get that. At least I hope so.
I think so, too. Fingers crossed. I think that there's a good chance that this is, you know, you look back at that game earlier in the year, it seems like more of an anomaly in the Georgia schedule.
Certainly on defense.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It just seems like that was more of a one-off. And if that's the case, then I really think we're in for a good one tonight.
We'll see what happens. Kickoff is at 6 p.m. Alabama and Georgia from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. It is the 2022 National Championship game. We are live in the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. And it's, of course, brought to you by Iconic Electric and Controls. Currently hiring fully ticketed tradespeople to fill all roles. Learn more about job opportunities at iconicec.com/careers. Take a break. When we come back, the title game will be featured, as will everything else that's happened in the world of sports today. Headlines coming up at the top of the hour to kick off our third and final hour on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.